Welcome to Conscious TV with Tom and Ramon. Before we introduce our guests, we have a very special guest, but I just want to mention a few things. Don't forget that me and Tom are blue-collar workers, and if you can, please donate. We don't charge for our archive for those of you who can't are unable to help us. You pay it forward for those of you who can. And also, today is the last day for the contest for Crystal Clark's book, Who Are We Really 101, Return of the Shaman.
Just pop over to the forums and register on the forums, and that automatically enters you there. So,
yeah. Don't forget to check out our videos. We have a bunch of videos, anything we find that's important, we have on. And what else, Tom?
Well, that's about it. New paradigm page. We've got a lot of good things going on there. The seeds and the water and all that sort of thing. So check that stuff out. There's some good information there.
Let's not forget to say hello to the 54th country, Nigeria. Thank you for listening.
Yes, absolutely. So
who do we have, Tom?
Do our thoughts create our reality? Can we prove that consciousness survives the body's death? Is our entire universe just a hologram? After a near-death experience in 1998, that set off an incredible series of paranormal events. Hazel Courtney felt compelled to seek out spiritual masters and leading scientists to help her uncover what was really going on. In this book, Countdown to Coherence, she has done an absolutely fantastic job of bringing some coherence to the thought process for those of us who are actually seeking and asking those questions. What is really going on? Hazel, welcome to Conscious TV.
Well, that's a very, very lovely introduction, and welcome to you guys, and well done on doing what you're doing.
So, Hazel, would you explain to me, what was that event that happened in 1998 for our listeners?
Right. Okay. What happened to me was I was a very busy weekly columnist with the broadsheet, the Sunday Times newspaper in London. And I used to answer alternative health questions to the public. It was an incredibly popular column way back then. And then just before Easter of 1998, it's very synchronicitous. We're doing this, you know, around the Easter period. I walked into Harrods, which is a very famous department store in London, and as I went through the turnstile that used to be in the bread hall, in those few seconds, the turnstile stuck, and it wouldn't go forward, and it wouldn't go back, and it was as if this incredible release of energy came up through my body, and I had massive pain in my chest. And in my head, and within about 3 or 4 seconds, I could hear a voice shouting in my head that I absolutely knew had not emanated from me, Hazel. And obviously it was shouting, "See a doctor now," which sounded like a lot of common sense considering I thought I was having a heart attack. So anyway, they managed to get me to my doctor's surgery within about 15 minutes. And whilst I was busy crying and they laid me on the floor and they stuck the heart monitors on me, and I was busy giving them farewell messages for my husband and my daughter, because anyone out there who's been through a near-death experience will know that in those final moments, all you can think about is the people that you really love, because it's at the end of the day, it's all that counts. And anyway, so as he was playing my heartbeat down the phone to the cardiologist, I suddenly realized that I was able to feel what the doctor was thinking in my head. I'd like become somewhat telepathic. And so when I told my doctor what he was thinking and what the cardiologist was saying to him, I'm really not quite sure who was more shocked, whether it was him or me. Anyway, of course, I already knew that my heart was fine. And so once I sort of got over all the panic and the shock, the doctor suggested that he couldn't figure out what was going on, but he sent me home and he said, "I'll call your husband and, you know, he'll come and see what's going on." So he said, "You better go home and go to bed and have a cup of tea," which in England is like our answer to absolutely everything. And so I went home and as I lay on the bed, I thought, well, I better ring a girlfriend and just share with her what just happened. And as I went to put my hand out to use the telephone, it sort of, my arm started doing its own thing and put the phone back in the cradle. And I realized with absolute incredulity that I wasn't being allowed, to use the phone. And so I thought, okay, I'll go and wash my face or something. So as I looked in my bathroom mirror, my eyes were a completely different color. And considering the huge shock I'd just been through, I looked a lot younger. My husband came home. Obviously, he was very concerned. He sat opposite me in the bedroom. I'll never forget. And he said, what on earth's the matter? And so, oh, this is when it got really interesting. I said to him, I said, oh, I've become very special. And so my husband's eyes widened and he said, what do you mean special? And I said, well, I'm going to be able to do things like Uri Geller. I'm going to be able to do some really weird things. And like, obviously he was freaking out. And to be honest, so was I a little bit. My brain was cooking. It was as if I'd been plugged into an ultimate supercomputer. And when I asked questions in my mind, I got dozens of answers, but because I didn't know which one was right. And then the next day, I hardly slept at all because the energy was so enormous. And the next day I kept asking people to look into my eyes and they'd know who I was. And my eyes were like two enormous saucers. But because I didn't know then who the ultimate I was, if you know what I mean. And then I developed an incredible fever to the point they thought I was going to start fitting. And I also was so cold, I thought I would freeze to death. And then I realized that I wasn't being allowed to eat physical food. And believe me, guys, I like food. And somehow I managed to get myself back up to the Midlands, a town called Birmingham, where we used to live. And I took to my bed because I started levitating. I was losing weight very quickly. I had the fever going on. I had the voices in my head. I mean, it was just the energies pulsing through my eyes. I was able to feel people's thoughts. I knew instantly what people around me were thinking. The weather was freaky, like there was this massive snowstorm that shut eventually on the Easter Saturday all the train stations. There was thunder, lightning, and somehow I knew that I was linked to the storm. Anyway, eventually, on the Easter Saturday, a friend of mine who was a doctor came up from London. He was a medical doctor because I knew I couldn't call my normal orthodox doctor. I knew that whatever was going on was not totally normal. And my next door neighbor in those days was quite spiritual. And she said, I think you've had a walk-in. And I said, well, what the devil's a walk-in? And she said, I think you're possessed. And I said, for God's sake, it's 1998. This does not happen to a Sunday Times journalist, you know, not in the middle of Harrods. So anyway, by this time, I was looking pretty poorly. You know, I mean, I got the voices shouting in my head. I was affecting electrical equipment. I was being affected by electrical equipment. I was totally telepathic, psychic. I was giving like darshan into people's eyes, not knowing what I was doing. And in the end, with the doctor present, I kind of almost died of shock. I moved from this world to another, and I found myself on the ceiling of our bedroom looking down on myself. And it took me a while to kind of realize that I, Hazel, was still alive. But then it was like watching a movie below me. And I realized that this thing in the bed that looked so awful was me. And obviously I came back, otherwise I wouldn't be here now. And I did a sort of deal with spirit. They said to me, you can go back if you will tell the story, if you will tell the truth of this story and what you're going to discover. And so, of course, I did come back and I went on to write a book called Divine Intervention, which was the story of the walk-in and who I was walked in by and what happened to me. And that came out in about 2000 and it's just been reissued in the States last week. And then, of course, it took me about 6 months to sort this whole thing out. I had to leave my column, which broke my heart, But when you are cooking electrical equipment, when you are shattering light bulbs, when you are telepathic, I mean, you cannot. You just cannot live a normal life. You just can't. Anyway, many things happened to me. But then after about 6 to 9 months, I thought I have to find logical explanations for what has gone on. And I went on to start researching, and I started to find people like William Tiller, who's a great physicist, and people like Professor Frederick Travis in Iowa, who have found what is the difference between a truly enlightened man or woman and the rest of us. And a whole load of stuff. And that went into the second book, which was called The Evidence for the Sixth Sense, which is also, I'm thrilled to say, being launched in the States. And at that time, I also met a guy called Professor Gary Schwartz, who you should definitely get on your show, who has spent many years researching survival of consciousness after physical death. And one of the first things I did was I contacted Gary, who thought I had completely lost the plot when he heard who I thought my walk-in had been. In fact, I know who my walk-in had been. And I asked him to test me scientifically in Arizona. And after reading my story, he agreed to do that. And in fact, the results of those trials were so jaw-dropping, and I say that in his words, not mine, that he went on to write two forewords for those two books. And so then, if you want me to stop, do say so. I do tend to get verbal diarrhea, no, guys.
Go on. This is and then, this stuff.
Okay. And then what happened after that was I went back to my life as a health writer, and I wrote another big health book. And then I kind of got the feeling again. You know how when spirit want you to do something, they kind of have ways of letting you really know about it?
Absolutely.
More and like a kick in the butt.
Oh, and then some, and then some. I got more than a kick in the butt. I had a major spiritual emergency, which is when spiritual awakening becomes a physical crisis, and I don't recommend it to anyone. But anyway, we can talk about that more later. But then I thought, well, I really should perhaps end this trilogy and somehow bring the whole thing to a really fantastic conclusion. But I thought, well, what am I going to write about? You know, like, is it going to be irritable bowel or what? You know, I didn't have anything more fascinating to tell people about. And so I said to Spirit, look, if you want me to write this third book, can you, like, set me on the right path? Now, this will freak you out. So what happened was, like you with your radio station, about a week later, I have a back problem. And so a week later, I booked a massage in a place I hardly ever go. I hadn't been there for years. I booked the appointment in my married name at the last minute. And when I turned up, this girl did my massage. And when I looked into her eyes, I knew that she was like cooking with gas. I knew she was online. And I said to her, what's your name? And I didn't mean like our physical names, like Hazel or Wendy or whatever it was. And she said to me, she said, my name is Divine Intervention. Well, that kind of blew me away because that was the title of my story. And so I thought, whoa, you know, and she said, you're going in the wrong direction. You need to read a book called The Disappearance of the Universe that has been written by a guy called Gary Renard. And so I thought, okay, all right, I'll read this book. And then the next day, my old secretary sends me an email saying, Hazel, would you like to go to this really interesting talk on Saturday? There's this guy coming from America. And I said, what's his name? She says, Gary Renard.
Wow.
I mean, you know, you start listening.
Can you ask for a little more clear?
So I went to the talk. He had no time to talk to me, but he was basically saying that this entire reality is a hologram, that if we could all place our ego into service for the whole without thinking what's in it for me. He was saying a whole bunch of stuff, and it was new to me in that moment. And so I said to him, I said, look, because so many people were pushing to speak to him at the end of this talk. And he said, look, if you really, really are serious wanting to interview me. You're going to have to get on a plane and come to Stockholm. I thought, well, they never make it easy, do they? So I went to Stockholm, and he's the first couple of chapters of the book, and that kind of set the tone of the whole thing. And so then I thought, I'll go to Arizona and speak again to Bill Tiller, because Bill Tiller had helped me a lot with how our thoughts create our reality. And when I got to Arizona, this is a couple of years ago, I said to Bill, I said, what is God to you? And he blew me away. He said, everything in the beginning, he said, all levels of reality, all energy was coherent. And he said that in science, they call it being in phase. And he said to me, every now and again, this pure coherence decoheres. And so he drew me this little diagram, and he said it would have formed non-physical societies, highly coherent societies, such as Mu. And then it said it would have gone on decohering, and it would have formed societies such as Lemuria. And then when it would have decohered even more, it would have formed societies such as Atlantis. He didn't say they were those societies. He said they would have been like those societies, but they would have been non-physical. And I said, well, how did we come into being? He said, then such people, such beings of light would then, he said, these people were very coherent. And he said that they would have literally intended this reality, this physical reality, into being. Now, for any of your listeners who think that sounds so ridiculous, it's not true, you need to keep in mind that even theoretical physicist Michio Kaku, who works at New York University, says that to form a universe such as ours would take a very small amount of matter, as little as a net ounce. Because you have to keep, people need to keep in mind that when the Big Bang happened, which wasn't really very big at all, yes, it was a huge energy release, but if we could have all been around at the moment of the Big Bang, it was less than the size of an atom, and you can get a million atoms behind a human hair. So if we had been around half a second after the Big Bang, you could have held this universe in your hand. So when our space-time reality was birthed in that moment, and time as we know it began, all energy that ever was or will be was released. So what we are is recycled energy and information. But anyway, going back to Bill, he said, so I said, okay, well, this decohering's gone on. So I said, you know, and we're here now. So I said, if your story's true, what happens next? And he said, well, according to my theory, he said, humanity has reached a point of minimal coherence. So I said, well, where are we headed now, Bill? And he said, this is the good news. He said, consciousness is now on its way home, back towards coherence, which of course gave me the title of the book, Countdown to Coherence. Right. And I just, before I stop blathering on, it's really important that people should understand that along my journey, I had that word coherence came up so many times because Professor Frederick Travis, who's been studying the science of enlightenment for 40 years at the Center for Cognition and Consciousness in Iowa, had told me that what separates a truly enlightened man or woman from the rest of us is the fact that their brains act as one. In other words, it's coherent brain functioning. That means that the left side of the brain and the right side of the brain and the whole brain is, you know, the brain waves, you can see them really clearly rising and falling as one. And so when I was in that very, very highly coherent state way back in 1998, I really understood the phrase, I and my mother, father, God became as one, because there are no words to explain how blissful that feels.
Right.
Go ahead, Tom.
I really like the way you expressed the psychic connection that you felt that you knew what they, you could feel what they were thinking. That's an excellent way to describe that connection.
Well, it makes me realize that when you are in the presence of a truly enlightened man or woman who's most probably spent lifetimes or decades in this time, lifetime, mastering their physical bodies, their emotional bodies, and so on and so forth, which, of course, I hadn't done. It happened spontaneously. So to integrate this kind of knowledge into your everyday life and to have the wisdom to use it wisely, whoa, that's a whole other story.
Right.
But the point is that when I was sitting with people, I knew, I felt what they were thinking even before they thought it. But what came out of their mouths and what they were thinking were always two entirely opposing thoughts. And so it made me realize that, can you imagine, guys, if we were all fully coherent, if we were all fully awake, or even more awake than, you know, I mean, 99% of the world's population don't have the faintest idea what we're talking about. But by teaching people to become more coherent, which we can do later on, then imagine if your intuition is so turned on that you automatically know whether someone's telling you the truth or not. Think how many lies could be just, I mean, just think how different life would be, and the need for all this ridiculous ego posturing in the Middle East and many other places in politics and life around the world. You know, we are all, I realized that what I went through, if people could do it in a safe and controlled way, I'm very lucky to be alive. But I also realized and have heard from hundreds and hundreds of people who have spent a lot of their lives in psychiatric units because they went through these awakenings and nobody knew how to cope with it. They weren't mad at all. They were walking between realities, between worlds, as I once did for a time.
Right.
I have to say that when you write about your book is so well written and it's so such an easy read and it draws you in so easily, and I really feel like I'm sitting down next to you and your guest while you're interviewing them.
And I could come and kiss your feet for saying that, Ramon.
Because you don't want to kiss my feet.
Sorry, just the chapter with Bill Tiller. After I spent 3 days with Bill in Arizona, his two chapters took me more than 3 months to write because Bill was so upset that I had to, if you like, dumb down his amazing science, because I had to keep saying to these guys, speak to me as if I'm 7 years old, because I said, if I can get it, anyone can get it. And they were so upset, like Bill was so upset that his highly technical science had to be, you know, transformed down into knowledge that anyone could get. And that's been my final goal, but it's taken me 3 years to do it.
It doesn't read like it. I'm sure you went through trouble writing it, but the main thing with the book is, you know, me and Tom do a lot of reading, we interview a lot of different people, and we watch a lot of YouTubes. And the number one thing that the book hit me the most is every time I read your book, my crown chakra would just go crazy, and I felt like I was in a meditation.
Wow.
So towards the end of the book, when you're talking about the coherence of the book, and it was 870? And I'll have you explain what that means, but I really believe that because it's such a high energy. And even now, as we're talking to you, I can tell that everything that's coming out, it's 100% truth. Just the energy feeling behind it. And you guys really have to pick up this book.
So Ramon mentioned the 870 rating through, and that's through kinesiology. Would you explain that a little bit, please?
Yeah, it's fascinating. Obviously, I'm trying to help people as much as I can for them to become more coherent at every level of their life, which will help them to be in the right place at the right time, be healthier, and basically awaken their inherent gut instinct. But anyway, What it is, there's a guy called Dr. David Hawkins. He's written the most beautiful book called Power Versus Force. And I think his other book was something like The Eye of the Eye. But anyway, I recommend that everyone should pick those books up too. Anyway, David Hawkins has spent a lifetime, really. He's a fully enlightened person. He was a psychiatrist. And he also went through an intense spiritual emergency and came out the other side, but he's managed to retain it and integrate it. And he and many of his scientific colleagues started to calibrate through kinesiology, which is a form of muscle testing. So in other words, the concept is that your higher self, your soul self, the divine part of you, always knows what substances or what foods will suit you or not. And you can test for pretty much anything. And they started to calibrate levels of coherence from 1 to 1,000. So their idea was that, let's say, the most enlightened person on the planet would be, say, someone like Jesus or someone like him who would calibrate at 1,000. And then fear calibrates at 100. And unconditional love, 500, and so on. And guilt and judgment calibrated at like 50. So what they're saying is, sorry, I've lost the plot a bit here. Basically, what they're saying is that if you have a true master of the self and they calibrate at 1,000, they can transmute all of the negative energy produced by humanity, because thoughts are things, which helps keep us from destroying ourselves. And they also said that at the moment, humanity calibrates at about 208, and that in any one lifetime, unless somebody wakes up to all this stuff, they can usually only grow 5 points in one lifetime. So I thought, crikey, that's not very much when I read it. And so he says that if you place your ego into service of the whole, just as Gary Renard and many others did, and if you are willing to say to the universe, you know, how can I help rather than what's in it for me, then he said you can grow far more quickly. And generally, he calibrated a lot of spiritual and religious teachings like way down. Like a lot of the fundamentalist teachings now, he's got calibrated down at 250. So it shows how incoherent we, or how much we've decohered, which is exactly what Bill was saying. And so through kinesiology, there are actually methods of measuring how coherent your brain is right now. And the other thing I'd love to touch on is, for instance, Fred Travis told me that as you meditate and tune into the space between your thoughts, it's known as the vacuum level of reality, which we could perhaps come back to later. He said what happens is over time your kundalini starts to wake up very slowly, whereas mine woke up in 2 seconds in Harrods. And he said when this happens, an area in the center of the brain, which is known as the thalamus, not the thymus, the thalamus, which is linked to sight, smell, touch, in other words, the senses, it begins to switch on and it ramps up more. And so what happened to me that moment in Harrods, my thalamus woke up like into overdrive. And so I could smell more. I could see more frequencies. I could hear more frequencies. And suddenly I really began to understand. And so what Fred is saying, that if people say can chant, because sound also helps the brain become more coherent, then this new reality can unfold more safely and over time. And then as you begin to discern what is your own ego speaking to you, or like eat that extra chocolate cake, Hazel, against, you know, don't eat it, it'll raise your cholesterol, you in the end you come to know when spirit are trying to get through to you. And this is really important, because I ended up in New York on 9/11.
I was there as well.
Oh, God. Were you really?
Yeah, I'm from New York originally.
Well,
and
you
so
know,
when you were saying that, I understood 100%.
Sure, but I mean, I had 3 days before I left for New York, I had fallen over really badly and sprained my ankle. I was on crutches. Then I got locked in my hotel room before I went to the airport. I couldn't get out of the hotel room. Then after I checked in on my crutches and using a wheelchair, the plane doors were closed without me getting on. But I was so determined to go to that meeting in New York, which had been to see Oprah Winfrey's people, which, of course, never took place. I just wasn't listening. So, in other words, all the signals were there, but my ego had overridden it and my free will had overridden it. But in other words, if I'd been in a better space, I would have listened to the signals and thought, gee, you know, someone's telling me not to do this.
Right.
And so, you know, people the world over, it's becoming a very dangerous place. If we can all awaken this gut intuition, our thalamus, then, you know, it could save your life.
Yeah. I had a similar situation, not on 9/11, but a while back, where I was supposed to go to this, and I'll make the story really quickly. I was supposed to go to a New Year's party, and we end up not going because my stomach just turned into knots. And if someone was putting something in my stomach and just twisting it, and I told my wife, okay, we're not going to go to the New Year's party. And as soon as I said that, it was gone. So,
wow.
I knew I wasn't supposed to go. The next day, several people had gotten injured, went to the hospital, people got arrested. So I'm not going to say where it was, but it's just sometimes you really get a harsh message, and it's very easy to ignore and just say, oh, that's just me.
You're right. You're absolutely right. So the more that we can listen to our intuition and, you know, learn when to trust it and become more discerning, then, you know, as you say, it can save you an awful lot of grief, for want of a better word.
Yeah. I'm going to put myself out on a limb here. I keep, and I know it's not me and I know it's not my wife, I keep smelling some kind of oil, like a myrrh. Are you wearing any kind of oils?
No,
it's like
I'm
a
not.
Really strong. As soon as you came on, the smell just got really strong. It might be just me then.
Well, Ramon, actually, right before, right at the beginning of this interview, I started burning a stick of what's called Tibetan musk, which is an incense. So you may be picking that up.
It's really strong up in my nose.
Wow.
Smells really good.
I would say for anybody who's trying to wake up, on the way of waking up, it's definitely a must-read book, because the way you draw things out, it's so easily understood. And I'm going to keep repeating, beating the dead horse with this.
You're very sweet. You really are. Because it's really funny, because years and years ago, I haven't really earned any money in the last 15 years, because I don't know if you guys have ever written a book, but, you know, you put an awful lot into it and you get very little back. And it's really funny. A very spiritual girl said to me about a couple of years ago, she said, you know, Hazel, she said, when you start seeing life from a different perspective, and she said, when you do this as like your charity work, life will flow much more easily for you. And it was amazing how that one sentence could like change my life. So it's like, I don't mind doing the work and calling it my charity work, but it's wonderful when people like you say that it actually helps you on your journey, because that is the payment, if you know what I mean.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
It's fantastic. So thank you.
Well, same thing here. We had when we started this show, Ramon and I both said, doesn't matter what the cost to us, or what the you know, how many interviews we have to do, or how many shows we have to do, our show will be a complete success if we help one person.
Well, then that's great.
And we got that almost immediately, the response. Well, thank you. What you guys have done has really helped me, type responses. So So that put us right out of the gates as considering that we were already a success because what we're doing has already helped someone. So
I met this monk one time. We interviewed this monk, and his name is Khan. And me and my wife went to go meet him here in Tokyo, and we were sitting with him, and his energy was so strong. So as you're describing, there's a part of your book where you're describing in the elevator with, I forgot his name.
Swamiji Shiv, Swamiji Shiv Kripananji.
Yeah, I can't pronounce that.
Yeah, anyway, yeah. Oh, I've just realized you just said Tokyo. How are things in Japan?
Things from where I live, about 45 minutes from Tokyo, and you couldn't tell. People are really good at hiding their emotions and stuff, and we're not in the areas that were highly effective. But if you go to Tokyo Bay, you can tell because that's all landfill. And certain the level has gone down of the land, and the manholes are a little higher above, and there's like YouTube videos where houses are floating on water, and it's all like you know man-made land. The whole entire Tokyo Bay is like that. But as far as over here, I'm just using my intention to remove any radiation.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, our thoughts are with you guys because that's been the most. I mean, you know, we moan. Like I might moan about my back, or you might moan about working long hours or whatever. But imagine losing absolutely everything you have or that you hold dear in like 5 minutes. And in fact, it's really interesting because have you ever heard of a book called Bringers of the Dawn by Barbara Marchaniak? I think that's how you say it.
Yes.
She wrote a wonderful book channeled from, she said, the Pleiades, the Syrians. And it was written about 10 years ago, but it's a bestseller. You can still get it, Bringers of the Dawn. And in that book, it said there will come a day when people will have to leave their homes and they will never be able to go back. And we're seeing this accelerating over and over and over again as this huge shift back towards coherence takes place. You know, it's not an easy process.
Well, I want to read something. I want to read something out of your book when you were speaking with that astrologer, Linda. What the heck? I can't find her.
Linda Joyce.
Yeah.
Linda Joyce. Yeah, she's great.
She said, from April 2011, when Neptune moves into Pisces, our yearning for spirituality will increase because faith will suddenly become more essential to our survival. This necessity could be brought about by natural disasters that bring us together, or a mass spiritual sighting, discovery, or experience that heralds a new reality. Now, just that statement in itself in your book is reflected immensely right now in the world. I mean,
It is, but it's also, you know, it harks back to this business of dear old Bill Tiller. And I should just share with people who Bill is. He's one of the world's finest material physicists. He spent 50 years studying consciousness and matter, mainly at Stanford University. And he now heads up the Tiller Foundation. And I know a lot of these scientists have their detractors. You know, there's lots of people who agree and who don't. But Bill has shown definitively, and his experiments have been verified by many places around the world, that our physical thoughts, if they are sustained and focused, can create a physical outcome. And this, in the future, I think could become very, very, very important. Excuse me again, because I said to Bill, I said, does that mean that if everyone was thinking the same thought at the same time and they really meant it with their whole heart and mind, I said, does that mean that humanity could, in principle, turn back an asteroid or deflect an asteroid or a tsunami or anything else? And he said, absolutely we could. He said, that would become child's play once we're all enlightened. Right. I mean, when you have people like that, because for instance, when I watched someone like Sai Baba manifest ash and manifest objects, which I did, I sat in a room with him with three other people, and I know he wasn't faking. I know not everyone agrees with Sai Baba. I'm not judging the man who's now, I believe, dying. But the point is, what they're doing is they're not manifesting something from nothing. What they are doing is organizing energy, which is what Bill talks about, so that physical events and objects can manifest in this reality. And this is because mind and intention form patterns which form matter. Now, scientists know that energy becomes matter, but they don't know how. They don't know the actual mechanics of it. And this is why they've got the big collider now in Europe. You know, is it in Switzerland, CERN? And they're trying to find out how energy becomes matter. And so when you guys think about this, that all energy that ever was or will be in this universe was birthed at that moment of the Big Bang, it makes you realize that we are merely recycled energy and information, because we were birthed from an explosion of light, and light carries information. So when atoms eventually evolved, like hydrogen atoms and so on and so forth, they started forming about 380,000 years after the Big Bang. The thing to really blow our minds is that we and everything in our universe is fundamentally made up of atoms. But atoms are known as a feedback system, which means that atoms have memory. So if you were to go to an ancient pyramid and put your hand on it, and you happen to be a highly awake soul, you can retrieve the information in the atoms that are in the pyramid. It's the same thing that, you know, I remember Deepak Chopra said to me once. He said, we are all one. He said, you could have atoms inside you now that were once inside Jesus or Mohammed or whoever. And I thought, oh my God, you know, this is so far out. But he was absolutely right. So now just go back and think about this, guys. The atoms that make you up now have been here since the beginning of time. Atoms have memory. So who and what you are is all inside you. All knowledge is inside you, and it's inside everybody.
Right. With that being said, have you experienced during or after or even before your experience manifesting something out of nothing and then, you know, being in shock that you did it?
When she just
I tried to manifest a ring because I'd actually, you know, I'd heard because I actually had this experience back in 98, and then I didn't meet Sai Baba till about, I can't remember, it must have been 2003, 2004. But because I had heard that such people could manifest objects, I actually tried doing it. And the shock when I realized that for a very brief moment that I could, I had this potential, it freaked me out so much it stopped it happening. But when you read fantastic books like The Biology of Belief by Bruce Lipton, he's a cell biologist. Yeah. You know, he's a brilliant guy. And when you read how the mind has an effect on the physical body, this is exactly what Bill is saying. It's what Bruce Lipton's saying. And it was certainly my experience. Mind comes first. Consciousness comes before everything. Mind and intention form patterns which form matter. And then we could carry the subject on to say, for instance, consciousness has to come into this reality. It has to go through three stages. It has to go from information to energy to matter. And a great analogy that Professor Gary Schwartz gave me is, first we see the lightning, seconds later we hear the thunder, and then after that we feel the vibration. The light, which is information, reaches us before the physical effect. So this is why so many people, I mean, what's his name now? Rupert Sheldrake, the biologist, has done great work. The numbers of people who saw that Princess Diana was going to be killed, the number of people who saw the Twin Towers before it happened, you know, the animals that ran away before the big tsunami in Sri Lanka, they're feeling the information before the physical reality. And so this is what most people who have a psychic premonition are doing. They usually feel something that is coming in the next 24 hours or so, because as the unmanifest becomes manifest, it starts to crystallize into this reality. So the bigger the event, the bigger the shadow it casts forwards and backwards in time. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Yes.
We do. So, we did it. We did a, you're talking about consciousness creating, affecting, matter. A few months ago, I started Masayamoto's rice experiment. Are you familiar with that?
No.
What he does, and this is an experiment anybody can do, and I've talked about it several times on the show. You take three containers and put three equal amounts of rice and three equal amounts of water in those containers, and every day you say to one container, thank you, I love you. You say to this other container, you idiot, I hate you, and then you ignore the third container. And you just watch the progress as the decay process through those three containers. And it is absolutely amazing, the results. The the glass, the container you tell I love you to, it stays fresh and white and pristine for a very, very long time. The one you say I hate you to, it starts decaying and getting real peaked looking, but the one that you completely ignore rots faster than the one that you hate. I mean, it's dramatic the amount of decay that happens in the ignore one. So that told me that any attention's better than no attention at all.
But you see, this is fantastic what you're telling me, because this validates, in a sense, everything that Bill and many other scientists are saying. What you think about the most, in other words, you're giving energy to it. Thoughts are things, they're frequencies, and they become set in your energy field around your grid, on your grid, energy field, whatever you want to call it, and they bounce back and become your reality. And so if people keep giving energy to things that they hate or loathe about themselves, as you said, that is what will come into being. But if you start concentrating on what you do want and you do it in a heartfelt, full emotion way, then that too will come into your being. But before you can get what you want, you have to let go of the energy of the old stuff. Otherwise, it's just going to be stuck on your grid forever. When you stop paying attention to something, it just dissipates and dies. And that's exactly what you've just said. And so if you had, Bill explained it, and I thought this was a wonderful analogy. He said, imagine 200 people go in a church. And they think with a coherent mind, with their hearts and minds, for an outcome, for, say, Joe Bloggs to be healed or whatever it is. And when they do that, they're building what's known as a sacred space, a coherent space. And this awakens the underlying field of intelligence, the latent energy within that church. And then they all go home and the energy starts to fall away. But then they come back the next day and they pray again. And then they come back the next day and they pray again. And he said that starts to organize like a lattice grid in geometric patterns until it reaches a plateau. And then the person that they're praying for will become well. And that happens because the energy and the energy within the church and the thoughts are creating a totally coherent atmosphere. It awakens the underlying intelligence that wants you and everything around you to be perfect. For instance, the water crystals at Lourdes. I know that you guys must know about the work of Dr. Emoto, Masaru Emoto.
Right. He's the one who did the rice experiment.
Yeah. I was thinking of him as you said it, obviously. And the water crystals at Lourdes are pretty coherent. So when people enter that sacred space of Lourdes, when and if they can truly believe with their whole heart and mind that they are healed, that's when they are healed. This is brain coherence is one of the explanations for spontaneous remissions in illness, because at that moment when you have total brain coherence, all karma from all times is wiped out. And so that pure coherence is instantaneously transmitted to every cell in the body, and therefore every cell in the body thinks I'm perfect, and they become perfect. And in the end, way back in 1998, it came to the point where I was almost afraid to think, because everything that I thought was happening instantaneously. It was like a madhouse. And so in the end, I would run around the house going, everything is perfect, everything is perfect, everything is perfect. Because I was so worried that if I didn't think that, something else would appear or disappear. You know, it was quite freaky. And I think it's also really important to say that there are an awful lot of kids out there who are taking crack cocaine and heroin and smoking cannabis, which I never did. I was a health writer. They are having spontaneous Kundalini awakenings. And in Countdown, you will have seen the picture of the girl who was on crack. She's only 15. And you can quite clearly see in that picture that all of her chakras have blown wide open. And she had a walk-in. And it's in a very immature consciousness. So these kids haven't the faintest idea what they're dealing with.
I have a story for you, Hazel. When I lived in New York, there was a gentleman. He was very high on crack, older gentleman, about in his 40s.
Wow.
And he was just like gibbering and jabbering and talking to himself and just like scratching and... And I said, you see that tree over there? He goes, yeah. I said, you should go hug that tree. It'll ground you.
Yeah.
And he went over to the tree and he hugged the tree. And then he sobered up for a few minutes. And he just kept kissing the tree. And I was like, how are you feeling? He was like, oh, man, wow. And you could see the instant change. He was no longer like just that walk, whatever walk-in he had, because I could tell there was an entity there.
Right.
Was gone. And as soon as he let go of the tree, he was right back. You know, his eyes became bloodshot again. And I said, hug the tree again. And he'll hug the tree. And then he just sober up. It was amazing.
But it is amazing. Strangely enough, when I was, I'll never forget as long as I live, years ago, I went to a big talk that Deepak Chopra was giving. And to start it off, he had this guy come out. There were about 4,000 of us. It was this massive theater in London. And he had someone come out with one of these crystal bowls. And we were all chanting the Om. And yet I could feel the resonance building. And I knew that I was going back into that heightened state again, which I was, by that time, I'd become a little bit nervous of. And I was so freaked out because I knew that my feet were starting to lift off the ground that I ran outside and I laid on the ground outside this theater in London in quite cold weather and held onto a tree, because I had learnt that when things get really hairy, if you like, to ground yourself instantaneously, if you hang onto a tree, it happens, as you say, almost instantaneously.
It really does.
And you need to eat physical food too, because remember, I wasn't eating any physical food for a while because I was living on divine light, and divine light is information. So because I had learned to digest the information, you know, what is matter? Matter is information.
Right.
And so I believe in the future that we will become light beings again. We will return to being non-physical beings. So I'm not inviting anyone to go on a hillside and stop eating food. That would be the craziest thing to do. You have to be a very highly evolved spiritual soul to be able to do things like that. But what I'm saying is, in science, they now know and recognize it's possible. They don't understand the mechanics of it yet, but they're getting there. You know, it's all happening really fast. So to close, I would, you know, just remind everyone that not to be envious of masters of light and time, because they are the forerunners that are helping the rest of us enter this process. You know, they're here to teach us. And if you are with a truly enlightened master, you should only feel absolutely true and unconditional love. And it's really important to know that we're all part of God and all parts make the whole.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, Crystal, so where can everybody get a hold of your material? And
oh, you're so sweet. All of my books are now available on Amazon.com in America. They should be at bookshops like Barnes & Noble. Countdown to Coherence is also available on Kindle. And my website has the details of pretty much all my books. And I'm sorry if it's not hugely up to date on my radio shows, but I just I'm only one person, so I can only do so much. But it's www.hazelcourtenay, which is CourtenEy.com.
Yeah, and you can just click on her picture, and it'll take you right to her website as well.
Right.
You've been such a pleasure to have on the show, and I wish we can keep you for another 5 hours.
You're so sweet. It sounds to me like you guys should be doing your own talking because you're both very awake already.
Well, we are working towards that ourselves. It's a process for us.
Absolutely. It's a process for us all, you know, but hey-ho. Anyway,
how is your back?
I'm thinking of having stem cells to try and regrow a couple of my discs because I fell very badly about 5 years ago. And I have quite severe osteoporosis. I'm 62. And it turns out that for long before I became a health writer, I had a hysterectomy. I know this is more information than either of you guys need, but for 20 years I had no estrogen. And so without estrogen, a lady's got no bones. But of course, I didn't know then what I know now. So I have this passion to help others not end up with bones like the ones that I have. But what I also know is if I could return to that totally coherent state, which of course I would love, and I do try to get a balance. I meditate, I chant, I eat good food, I do exercise. You know, we have to do it all. But I know that if I were truly coherent, then I should have been able to heal my back. But of course, it only happened 5 years ago. But it's maintaining the coherence that's a difficult thing. And even masters of the self, we're still in a physical body. We might be divine beings, but we're still in a physical shell. So the physical shell, unless you look after it properly, can, does, and will start to fail. So, you know, I may have learned what I've learned a little late for me, but I can help others not to go through the pain that I have to go through now. And I'm sure that one day I'll find an answer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, okay. Well, thank you so much for being with us, Hazel. We absolutely love you and you love your work. And are you coming to America? Are you doing a tour here?
No, I did. I did it. I got back last Sunday. I got home a week today.
Oh, that's what it was. Okay.
All right. So listen, lots of love to and great good luck for what you're doing. You're doing great stuff.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Hazel.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
We want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. And let's see. Next week we have who is next week?
Sonia
Barrett next week should be a very good interview.
We're going to continue the line of women. Should be Sonia Barrett, and then after Sonia Barrett, we have Lynn McTaggart.
Some good stuff coming up.
And then after that, we'll have Krista Clark with segment 3.
Yep. So all good stuff. Well, keep listening, guys, and we will talk to you later. Namaste.
Oh,
condemnation without investigation is the height of ignorance. Had to get that in.
Yay!
Good night.